A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're really taking on something important, trying to simplify the neuroscience behind emotional resilience in kids. We're diving into The Whole Brain Child by Dr. Daniel Siegel and Dr. Tina Payne Bryson.
Yeah, and it's such a needed conversation because, well, almost anyone raising or working with kids hits the same frustration point, right? We often focus just on managing behavior, trying to stop the action.
Right, the meltdown that's happening right now.
Exactly. But we often miss the developmental reality underneath it all. We react to the symptom, the tantrum, without really grasping the brain stuff causing it.
So our goal today is to bridge that gap, to move past just reacting. We want to understand, you know, the difference between old school discipline and what science tells us about how kids' brains actually work. How do we get from just surviving those tough moments to actually helping kids thrive?
Well, the core idea really is understanding that a child's brain is literally under construction. It's constantly changing, evolving, and often it's not fully mature until, believe it or not, the mid-20s.
Mid-20s, wow.
Yeah. So when we really get that, suddenly meltdowns look less like defiance and more like, well, opportunities to help build those crucial brain connections. It completely shifts how you approach things.
Thinking of challenges as opportunities. That's a powerful reframe.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the authors. First, Dr. Daniel Siegel. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA, a big name, a pioneer in something called interpersonal neurobiology.
Mm-hmm. IPNB. Yeah. That's really Siegel's big contribution. It's this fascinating idea that our relationships, especially early ones between kids and caregivers, don't just affect feelings. They literally sculpt the physical structure of the brain.
Wow. Okay. So relationships physically change the brain.
Exactly. Mental health and relational health are like intrinsically linked in this view. His work gives us that solid scientific underpinning.
And then there's Dr. Tina Payne Bryson, bringing the practical side. She's a psychotherapist, works directly with kids and families. Her focus is, okay, how do you take this, you know, sometimes dense brain science and actually use it, like when things are falling apart at home?
Right. And that combination is gold. Siegel brings the science, the concept of mindsight, which is basically understanding your own mind and having empathy for others. And Bryson translates it all into like actual steps parents can take, even when they're exhausted. It makes the science usable.
Okay, so let's zoom in on the main idea of the book.
Okay.
If you boil the whole brain child down, it really comes down to one word, integration.
Integration, exactly. That's the bedrock of mental health, of resilience. It means linking up the different parts of the brain so they work together smoothly, like a well-coordinated team.
And when they're not integrated,
that's when you see the chaos, the rigidity, the big emotional swings, the impulsive stuff. It happens when brain regions aren't communicating well.
They use this great metaphor to explain it, the brain as a house with two floors. I find that super helpful.
It really is a brilliant way to picture it. So you've got the downstairs brain. Think of it as the ground floor, maybe even the basement. It's the older, more primitive part, brainstem, limbic system.
Okay, so instincts, basic functions.
Yep, survival stuff. Big emotions like fear, anger, the fight, flight, freeze response lives down there. And importantly, it's pretty much fully formed and online from birth.
Got it. Then there's the upstairs brain, the second floor.
Right, the cerebral cortex. This is the sophisticated part, the executive suite, you could say. It's where we do our complex thinking, logic, planning, morality, self-control, empathy, the part that lets us pause and think before acting.
Which in kids is clearly still under construction.
Massively under construction. So the main job of parenting, according to this model, is helping kids build a strong, reliable staircase, connecting the downstairs emotional hub to the upstairs thinking center.
A staircase. I like that.
Yeah, because kids are constantly getting flooded by those downstairs emotions, right? Their lid flips, and they need our help repeatedly to build those pathways so the upstairs brain can eventually come online and help manage things.
Okay, so let's get into the how. The book gives 12 strategies. Let's start with integrating the two sides of the brain, the logical left brain and the emotional right brain.
Right. So think about when a child is really upset, just lost an emotion. They're basically experiencing a right brain flood. The right side deals with the big picture, emotions, nonverbal cues.
So trying to reason with them logically at that point
is like speaking a foreign language.
Yeah.
The left brain, which handles logic, language, linear thinking, it's just not accessible in that moment. They literally can't process it.
Okay, this explains a lot. So strategy one, which they say is key, connect and redirect. The idea is connect first with the right brain, then redirect with the left. But honestly, in the heat of the moment, say over a broken toy, isn't the instinct just to say, it's fine, stop crying? How do you actually do the connect part first?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It feels counterintuitive. But here's the neuroscience bit. When you connect emotionally first, you get down on their level, you validate the feeling, wow, you look so angry right now, or I see how sad you are about that toy. You're using empathy. That empathy actually activates their mirror neurons. It helps calm the storm in their downstairs brain. It achieves what we call co-regulation. And that calm state is what allows the upstairs logical brain, the prefrontal cortex, to become receptive again. So connection isn't just nice, it's neurologically necessary before correction can even land.
Connection first creates the opening for learning.
Okay.
That makes sense. And strategy two, name it to tame it. Seems like it builds on that connection.
It really does. It's incredibly powerful, though simple. It's about using language that's left brain to label the big, messy feeling the right brain is experiencing.
So just putting a word to the emotion.
Exactly. And here's why it works. When you help a child say, I feel frustrated, or even just acknowledge, you seem really mad, you're activating their left brain, specifically the prefrontal cortex. That part then sends signals down to the amygdala, the brain's smoke detector or alarm system, and basically tells it to calm down a bit.
Wow. So naming the feeling literally dials down the intensity.
Precisely. You're helping them regulate from the inside out just by using words.
That's fascinating. Okay, let's go back to the house metaphor. Integrating upstairs and downstairs.
Yeah, so remember those big meltdowns? When a child completely loses it, Siegel and Bryson call that flipping their lid.
Flipping their lid. I've seen that happen.
Oh, yeah. It means the downstairs brain survival mode has totally hijacked the system. The upstairs brain, the thinking, rational part that knows hitting isn't okay, is temporarily offline. It can't be accessed.
Yeah, like trying to reason with a toddler about sharing when they're mid-tantrum. Pointless. Which brings us to strategy three. Engage, don't enrage.
Exactly right. If a child has flipped their lid, trying to force them, lecture them, or make demands that require that offline upstairs brain, well, it usually just makes things worse. It enrages them further.
So don't add fuel to the fire. What do you do instead?
You engage the upstairs brain, gently coaxing it back online. Often, the simplest way is through connection, like we talked about, or by offering simple choices that require a tiny bit of thought.
Like, do you want to wear the red pajamas or the blue pajamas, even when they're upset?
Yes, even a small choice like that requires the upstairs brain to make a calculation, to participate just a little. It's like asking them to take one small step up that staircase you're helping them build, which leads nicely into strategy four, use it or lose it.
Meaning the upstairs brain needs practice.
Absolutely. It's like a muscle. If we always step in and solve their problems, manage their conflicts, tell them exactly what to do, those upstairs skills, problem solving, decision making, impulse control, they don't get exercised. They don't develop strongly.
So we need to consciously create opportunities for them to practice those skills, even if it's messy sometimes.
Especially when it's messy. That's where the real learning happens. Practice builds those crucial neural pathways.
Okay, shifting gears a bit. The book talks about integrating memory, especially for dealing with tough past experiences.
Yes, this is so important for resilience. They make a key distinction between implicit memory and explicit memory. Implicit is like body memory. It's the feelings, the sensations, the unconscious reactions linked to an event, often without a clear story attached. Trauma often gets stuck here.
Okay, like a gut feeling or a sudden unexplained fear?
Exactly. And explicit memory is the conscious stuff, the facts, the narrative, the story you can tell about what happened. Integration here means helping connect the implicit feelings to an explicit story.
Making sense of the scary feelings by putting them into words.
Precisely. Which brings us to strategy five. Use the remote of the mind. It's such a practical tool.
How does that work?
You help the child visualize the difficult memory like a movie playing in their mind. Then you give them a mental remote control. They can pause the memory, rewind it, fast forward through scary parts. It gives them a sense of agency, of control over the memory rather than just being flooded by it. It helps integrate it.
That's a really clever technique, especially for kids. Okay, the final dimension of integration is about connecting self and other, the me-we idea.
Right. This is all about developing empathy and social intelligence. Strategy nine is key here. Exercise mindsight. Mindsight is that ability to see your own mind and understand the minds of others.
So teaching kids to see from someone else's perspective.
Yes, and it needs active teaching. It doesn't always come naturally. We need to prompt them constantly. How do you think your sister felt when you said that? Or what might grandpa be thinking right now? Asking these questions literally builds the neural circuits for empathy and compassion.
It's building that theory of mind. And finally, maybe my favorite, strategy 10, increase the family fun factor.
Yes. It sounds simple, but it's deeply important. Playfulness, shared joy, laughter. These aren't luxuries. They are biologically essential for building strong, secure attachments.
So having fun together builds up emotional reserves.
Totally. Those positive experiences create a buffer, a foundation of connection that makes it easier to navigate the inevitable conflicts and stresses later on. Fun is brain building.
Okay, stepping back from the specific strategies, what are the really big overarching messages here, the philosophical shifts this book encourages?
Well, number one has to be connection before correction. We've touched on it, but it's fundamental. A child whose feelings are validated, who feels understood, their brain literally shifts. They move out of that defensive, reactive state into one where they can actually learn and take guidance. It turns traditional discipline on its head.
No more, because I said so.
Pretty much. Second big theme, storytelling as a healing tool. The act of creating a coherent narrative about experiences, especially difficult ones, is crucial for mental health. Helping kids make sense of their lives by telling their story integrates those experiences.
Giving meaning to the chaos.
Exactly. And the third, which is just so empowering, is understanding neuroplasticity and hope. The brain can change. Every single interaction shapes the brain. They have that great phrase, where attention goes, neural firing flows, and neural connection grows.
So our responses matter. Every time.
Every time. It means change is always possible. We're constantly shaping and reshaping neural pathways. It offers immense hope.
The book is also packed with these really sticky phrases, little nuggets of wisdom. Let's revisit a few.
Okay. Well, we already talked about name it to tame it. Simple reminder. Language regulates big emotions.
Then there's that powerful quote about why we connect. Connection is why we're here. Without it, there is suffering. Really grounds everything in our basic human biological need for relationship.
Mm-hmm. And for anyone who puts pressure on themselves to be a perfect parent, I love this one. The goal isn't to avoid conflict, but to repair when conflict occurs and to learn from these experiences.
Yes, focus on the repair, the resilience, not some impossible ideal of constant harmony.
Exactly. And finally, the idea of co-regulation summed up. What's shareable is bearable. When a child shares a tough feeling with an empathetic adult, the burden genuinely gets lighter. It helps integrate the experience.
Okay, let's bring this right down to earth. Real-life applications. Mm-hmm. Handling meltdowns using this approach.
Okay, so classic scenario. Kid losing it in the supermarket because they want candy. Old way might be to ignore, threaten, or just give in. Whole brain way. Connect first. Wow, those candies look amazing. I know you really want one right now. Validate the desire.
Mm-hmm.
Right brain.
Connect.
Then once they feel heard, maybe slightly calmer, you redirect, left brain. Candy isn't on our list today, but you can choose between these grapes or this apple when we get home. Or how about you help me find the healthy snack we planned? You connect, then gently redirect.
And applying it to discipline, say, siblings fighting.
Instead of yelling or sending them to separate rooms immediately, which is often an enrage response, try. Engage, don't enrage. Get down, validate both kids' feelings. Okay, I see two very angry people who both want the same truck.
Acknowledge the emotion.
Yes. Then engage their upstairs brains. This is a tricky problem. How can we solve this so you both feel okay? What are some ideas? You guide them through problem solving instead of just imposing a solution. You're teaching, not just punishing.
And crucially, this isn't just for kids, right? We can use this on ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. Maybe the most important application. When you feel overwhelmed or triggered by your child's behavior, which happens to everyone, you can use their SIFT technique.
SIFT. Remind us what that stands for.
Sensations. What am I feeling in my body? Images. What pictures come to mind? Feelings. What emotions am I experiencing? And thoughts. What stories am I telling myself?
So, pausing to notice your own internal state.
Exactly. Before you react, take a breath and SIFT. Notice the tightness in your chest sensation. Maybe flash to an image of your own childhood image. Name the feeling, frustration, anger, helplessness, feeling. And identify the thought, they never listen. Thought.
And just doing that helps.
It does. By noticing and naming your own internal storm, you're engaging your own upstairs brain. You're calming yourself down before you react. You're modeling the very self-regulation you want your child to learn. It's powerful.
It really is a profound shift. For me, I think the biggest takeaway, the thing that really landed, is seeing challenging behavior not as defiance, but as communication. It's a signal about an unmet need or an undeveloped skill. And realizing our response in that moment is actively wiring their brain.
Yeah.
That feels both like a huge responsibility and an incredible opportunity.
Well said. And for me, it's that deep current of hope rooted in neuroplasticity, moving away from seeing parenting as like a battle of wills and instead viewing it as this ongoing chance to nurture integration, to build those connections. It feels more collaborative, more positive. It's about raising resilient, emotionally intelligent people, not just obedient kids.
It really provides a shared language, a toolkit for the whole family's emotional well-being. So the question we leave you with this week is, which one of these strategies really resonates? Maybe connect and redirect, maybe name it to tame it, maybe exercising mindsight. Which one will you consciously practice and model in your family this week? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.